Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
It is a fun day to be doing Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. If you were listening to yesterday's podcast, right at the very end, we got some nice news that on the heels of four-star offensive lineman Micah Morris committing to UGA, the Dogs would get another commit for the class of 2021 when four-star running back Lavoisier Carroll, originally from Warren County, Georgia, playing his high school football at IMG Academy, when he also announced his pledge to UGA. And when I was talking about this morning on the video edition of Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger, one of our Facebook commenters, Kylan and Susan Richter, said, does this count as an in-state commit because he's from Warren County, or does it count as an out-of-state commit, another recruiting win in the state of Florida, given the fact that he goes to IMG? And I think the answer to that is, and y'all, I'm going to be a little tough to take today, especially if you happen to not be a UGA fan and you're checking in on the show, but I think the answer is kind of both. I mean, obviously, being from Warren County is probably something that Georgia used to initially get Carroll's attention. That's, a great way to establish a bond with somebody. You know, there seems to be an added push, an added emphasis on keeping dogs at home. And so using the Warren County tie to get your foot in the door probably worked pretty well for Georgia on that. But there's also some significance to the fact that Carroll now plays his high school football at IMG. IMG's obviously been really good to Georgia last couple of years, whether you're thinking about Nolan Smith or Warren Brinson. Georgia has done some nice work there at Bradenton at the very well-known, famous, popular private school known as IMG Academy. So I think you really take this as both. Officially, I guess it will count as an in-state recruit because of where he's originally from. But the real relevance of all this to me is it's another win for Georgia at IMG, and conversely, another opportunity for Florida that just didn't come to be. Now, I know y'all, I'm a Gator hater, and obviously we make a big deal about that. We have fun here. So you can take all of this with a grain of salt if you want to, and you may be wise to do so. But hard not to notice the events of the last couple of days as anything more than a stern reminder that Florida is still well in back of where Georgia is, whether it comes to the on-field work in the SEC East or whether it comes to the recruiting wins and losses that pave the way for what happens on-field. I still see a substantial gap between Georgia and Florida, and the pledge from Morris, the pledge from Carroll, more evidence of that being true. I mean, let's not forget here for a moment. Let's not forget that when Jeff Sintel joined us yesterday, Micah Morris, who's not even going into his senior season of high school, what Jeff told us about Morris, because he's from Camden County and that sort of St. Mary's, Kingsland area down there, closer to Gainesville, Florida, than it is to Athens, Georgia, that Morris had already visited Florida about 10 times or so. Connor Riley, who's going to join us here in a moment, is going to remind us about Carroll that he probably had Florida as his public leader on all of this. So you had two recruits that Florida really thought it was in on. A lot of visits from Morris. Carroll, an IMG guy who had kind of been flirting with the Gators. If you're Florida, you think you're in pretty good on Lavoisier and Micah. And yet, once again, the recruiting stuff kind of works out the way that it has been the last couple of years. Dan Mullen just not able to close the deal. And I know it sounds like I'm, grandstanding in all of this, and to a degree I probably am. It's fun. It's fun to see your team get another big recruiting win over your rival. But I think this is also an important rebuke against some of the people, national media wise and other, who keep wanting to tout Florida as on the verge of overtaking UGA. I'm a huge believer that success leaves clues, and that any huge breakthrough, there's going to be some moments preceding that where the breakthrough is hinted at. And for Florida, what are those moments? In college football, it ought to come from recruiting. If you're about to have great on-field success, it's always, the predecessor to all of that's always going to be recruiting. But what huge win does Dan Mullen have thus far? I would say he doesn't have too many, and that's one of those reasons why, in addition to just liking Carroll and Morris as players, Another thing on this fun Friday to enjoy is the fact that Georgia gets more what appears to be head-to-head wins versus Florida in recruiting. Because let's not forget here for a moment. You know, Dan Mullen has kind of led the way and feeling pretty good about himself and feeling pretty good about what he's built at Florida and has had no problem trying to sell that to Gator Nation, so to speak. It may be hard to remember back at a time when we still had public gatherings, but there was a basketball season. It was ended before the postseason, but there was a college basketball season this year, and like a lot of coaches do, grabbing a microphone at halftime to speak to the crowd, Dan Mullen did that. And boy, Mullen had a lot of big talk when he met with that crowd about all the things that had done at Florida, all the things that were about to be done, and he was feeling pretty good about himself at the time. So when you think about Georgia picking up in the 2021 class, right where it was in 2020, going head-to-head for guys like Carson Beck or Warren Brinson or Jalen Carter or whomever else. Just keep in mind that all of this is sandwiched around a time in which Dan Mullen is telling the Florida fans about how great everything is down in Gainesville. Here's Mullen from a basketball game.
The unbelievable atmosphere and the home field advantage you created for us down at the Orange Bowl down in Miami to get another great win. And I promise you this, that's just the beginning. We finished the top 10 in the last 2 years. And that's the beginning. We came back to bring the, I came here to bring the Gator Standard back, which is a team that's going to compete for and win SEC National Championships all the time. And that's what we're going to be.
So, I mean, crowds just loving it, just cheering and eating it up. Gator Standard, championships gets used, back-to-back top tens, whatever else that he's touting there. But it's a helpful reminder that back in November, when his team, Florida, got together with Georgia, after that game, Dan Mullen wasn't singing quite as happy of a song, wasn't singing quite as happy a tune. In fact, relevant here because we're talking about Lavoisier Carroll, at one point he was kind of peppered with questions from reporters in his post-game press conference after another loss to Georgia, his third in as many years as a head coach. He was peppered with, how come you couldn't run the ball? Where were the running plays? How come the run got abandoned? So the Dan Mullen, who's accepting all the cheers and cutting a promo with the Florida fans on how great the future is, just remember back in November, it wasn't nearly as happy a Mullen. Here he is getting a dose from his own beat core.
Coach, they do anything special to stop you guys in the run game? You really had nothing on the ground today.
No. I hadn't done anything to me. You know, I mean, we fell behind. We wanted to take the lead. We fell behind early. You know, and so we were throwing a little bit more. The goal was to try to take the lead. I think, you know, that big, they scored that touchdown to take the lead was a big, I think that was the biggest play of the game right there, right? I think we thought we were off the field on third down and they got sent back on.
Does it make it harder to call plays though when you the run game?
I don't think we tried to call many run game plays, to be honest with you. I don't think they did. And then when we ran the ball, P. Ryan had 7 carries, 31 yards, right? Pierce, 3 for 13, right? I mean, I don't know, 10 for 44 for the running backs. We just didn't run the ball much.
Flippant disregard of the question. I don't know. We just didn't call very many running plays. Here's what I'm guessing. It's stuff like that. You might be able to draw a straight line towards a recruitment like Lavoisier Carroll for a guy who says, maybe after thinking better of this, Florida's not quite the place I want to be. Georgia going head-to-head with the Gators, getting another big-time recruiting win. On this Friday, which a lot in the world seems a little weird and unsettled, that is exactly the way that things should be. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Kroger, and don't forget, Kroger's your one-hop shop for all the Easter savings as we get ready for this Sunday. You can currently save 50% on everything from egg fillers, candy, dye kits, and special treats for the kids and baskets. I know we spent some time yesterday dyeing some eggs that we had gotten at Kroger. We're excited about Easter. It's going to be a different kind of thing. We're not going to be at church. We're not going to be with family, but we're going to be making the best of the situation. And wherever you are, I hope that you're doing the same thing. And I've got a great deal I want to tell you about later on, also from my friends at On Reserve. So please make sure you stick with us for that. I'll do more of that coming up. We'll also get Connor Riley here in just a moment, too. We'll talk to him about Morris and Carroll as players. We'll have some fun at the expense of the Gators here today as well. We'll do all of that. I know there was a little bit of a video issue this morning So for those of you that typically watch us on YouTube, if you're checking out the podcast today, we appreciate you doing that. Sorry for the issue. We were on Facebook, a little bit of a late start, a little bit of a technical issue. We're trying to get our broadcast as close to back to normal as we can. At some point in time, our hope is to be able to do the radio show, podcast, video show simultaneously the way that we have for all these years, and we're just not quite there yet, so we're keeping on working on that. Huge thanks to all the people who are behind the scenes tirelessly putting in effort to make that happen, and we're going to keep delivering Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger and keep working to make it better each and every day. I'm really excited about being able to do all of that. And of course, I am right now no different than so many of you, challenged to figure out a way to work at home and figure out a way to get things done. And I'm probably like a lot of you there as well, that, man, you know, I never knew how much I appreciated being able to drive in and go to work than I do right now, just given the fact that the comfort, the convenience of our studio, I don't have access to that. A lot of people in broadcast world are kind of dealing with some of the same stuff right now. We're all in this together, and that's obviously for a great reason and a good cause. But nonetheless, there's still that feeling of, man, I just sort of wish things could get back to normal. It's hard working from home. It's hard managing the situation when you've got two young kids who they want their attention and they, you know, expect things to kind of revolve around them sometimes. It was nice to know, though, that I'm not the only one dealing with this. As I said before, many of you are kind of dealing with the same thing. And I guess you can add to this Georgia coach Kirby Smart as well, because I thought it was really funny. And you can see this for yourself if you go to DogNation.com. We have a story on this. Laura Rutledge has been going around and interviewing through the magic of video conference and whatnot. A lot of the SEC coaches are key figures around football as of late. And when she had a chance to check in and talk to Georgia coach Kirby Smart, you know, Smart had the same thing kind of show up that a lot of us do as well. You're trying to have that video meeting via Zoom or Teams or whatever it is that you're using. And at that particular moment, one of your children decides he or she really needs some of your time. We've all dealt with that during this coronavirus shutdown. Georgia coach Kirby Smart apparently dealing with that too. Take a listen to this from Laura Rutledge.
Laura, can you hold on a second?
Yes.
Can we saw that? Come here a second, son. Come here. I need you to say hey to everybody real quick.
Hey.
I can't talk on this in focus when you're holding a snake up in front of me, okay? So he's holding a picture of a snake up. I can't. Where's that at, son?
It was in the what? It was just when we drove in.
Look, buddy, I got to do this right now. You can't come in here, okay? Bye.
Hi.
Sorry.
Sorry.
So listen, I think that's a really nice thing to be able to see. Kirby Smart having some fun with one of his kids. My kids are the same way. If they see a snake or something like that, you better believe that's all they're going to want to talk about. And we're already starting to see a good many of those around our house right now. So a lot of you in the same boat. Kirby Smart kind of getting through it the best you can there as well. It's a nice thing to see. It's kind of a human moment. Smart talked about that this week, too, of, hey, listen, you know, we're just trying to make the best of the situation and make the most of it. And it's kind of a nice thing to see. So good job by Laura Rutledge and ESPN kind of putting it out there. And good job by Kirby having a nice sense of humor as he balances being a dad, a husband, and a coach all at the same time. And, of course, I want to make sure that I tell you before we get ready to speak to Connor Riley about a great deal going on from our friends at Honor Reserve. And, you know, if you can't see me right now because I'm not doing this on video currently, but I've got an Honor Reserve shirt on right now. It's some of the most comfortable, best-looking apparel you can possibly wear. There's a location right there in downtown Athens. It's one of my favorite things to visit when I come downtown. It's one of the, I think, the just the best things about that downtown Athens scene. Great shopping, like what you get at On Reserve, great apparel. And as we get ready for Father's Day, graduation day, everything else, at onwardreserve.com right now, there's a great deal for you. When you use the promo code DOGNATION, you get 25% off your gift card purchase. That means a $100 gift card, just $75. A $500 gift card, just $375. It's 25% off your gift card purchase when you use the promo code DOGNATION. So go to onwardreserve.com or go to dognation.com and find the tab for Onward Reserve there at the top of the page. Get into the site, look for gift cards, use the promo code DOGNATION. You can save 25% off. Also, when you get the physical gift card sent to you, they'll give you a special gift as well. And I've got one of these. I had one of these sent to me yesterday because of my gift card purchase. The Onward Reserve Athens koozie. It's a really cool looking koozie. Dog fans love koozies. This is a really nice one. That's yours as a special gift. And I've also found out that when you use the promo code DOGNATION on any of your purchases right now at onwardreserve.com, you'll get the Onward Reserve Athens koozie as a special thank you for that. You know, TJ and the whole team over there, big UGA folks. They've got officially licensed UGA apparel. They are just a great Athens-based business, a great chance to support them. And really also take good care of yourself and get yourself some really nice apparel as we head towards Mother's Day and the springtime and what would be Easter Sunday this weekend and all kinds of fun plans coming up this summer that we're really looking forward to. No better way to enjoy all of that than by living authentically in some very nice Honor Reserve gear. So check out honorreserve.com on that and make sure you use the promo code DOGNATION. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey spoke out yesterday. More thoughts on when it is that college football might return and how it is that we'll travel down that path towards getting there. Sankey had some things to say about that. We will discuss that in a moment here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. But for now, for more on Micah Morris, for more on Lavoisier Carroll, and for more on what's next, let's talk to Dog Nation's Connor Riley.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Connor, I guess let me begin, before we kind of get into a little bit more of the details with the two recruits themselves, give me your thought when I said before that when you see Carroll at IMG Academy, when you see Morris at Camden County, which is closer to the Georgia coast, therefore closer to Gainesville than it is Athens, when you see Georgia swooping in to win with these commitments, if you're a Florida fan, hard not to see this as a pretty substantial L, is it not?
I was wondering how long it was going to take you before turning this into a mark against the Gators. I believe Carroll had publicly named Florida as his leader at one point before his commitment. Now, Carroll is obviously from Warrenton, Georgia, so he does obviously have a lot of ties to the state of Georgia. But, again, this is sort of the waters you choose to swim in when you bring in a guy like Tim Brewster and he starts talking about how we're going to, you know, lock down the state. Well, Georgia show that there's a lot of really good players in Georgia and they can probably build a better recruiting class of just Georgia guys in this specific class than if they necessarily needed to go in and get a few of the top guys in Florida, which they can still certainly do.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And, you know, look, my point on all of this is that success leaves clues, right? And we've been told, whether it be Tim Brewster, and listen, Brewster, for the most part, is doing his job. The tight ends coach there, as much as I like to kind of, you know, bang on him, criticize him, and use him as a focal point for laughter here on the show, you're supposed to come in and make some noise. You're supposed to come in and kind of rattle pots and pans. So from that standpoint, I think he's doing what he's supposed to do. But for the more, I guess, objective folks out there, not Florida assistant coaches, but media people, folks like that, who want to say that Florida is getting ready to overtake Georgia in the SEC East or be a real thorn in Georgia's side under Dan Mullen, there's got to be some proof that's going to take place. And it's really the roster acquisition that should prove that one way or another. But the fact that does not happen in the case of Morris, the case of the Carroll, go back and talk about Jalen Carter and Warren Brinson, Carson Beck, guys from the 2020 class. At some point in time, if you're going to overtake Georgia on the field, you're going to have to show some evidence of overtaking them in the recruiting class. And, you know, under Dan Mullen at Florida, that just hasn't happened yet, has it?
Right. The issue with Florida isn't that you need one Tim Brewster. One Tim Brewster isn't going to come in and suddenly fix your program. You need 8 or 9 Tim Brewsters. Now, Florida does have, I believe, the number 4 recruiting class in the country right now, but that's largely based off the fact that they have a higher number of commitments. If you look at the average sort of commit ranking, Georgia is currently dwarfing what Florida is doing right now. So Georgia is certainly getting more talented prospects. And you know, I think the whole idea and notion of Florida overtaking Georgia just goes back to Dan Mullen's always sort of been a media darling. He think certainly knows how to charm the media, how to play himself up and play his program up, and perhaps it's maybe actually better at or what it is actually at. And I think you're going to continue to see that just because he sort of knows how to play this game.
Let's start with the players themselves here for a moment, starting with the guy that most recently committed to Georgia. That's Lavoisier Carroll, the 4-star running back. I believe that running back's a pretty significant position of need for Georgia's 2021 class. Carroll looks like a pretty good prospect. Athletically, he can do a lot of different things. I know this is not the first running back we've necessarily talked about for the 2021 cycle, and it's not the only back we'll talk about as well. But what do you think of Carroll as a player?
Yeah, I think Georgia can sign 5 straight 5-star running backs and still think running back's a pretty big position in need for Georgia. You know, Carroll, he's a good player. He plays, obviously, for one of the best programs in the country in IMG Academy. I think with the running back position, Georgia is not done in the slightest. I think they've always wanted to sign 2 guys in this class, given that Zamir White and James Cook are both draft eligible after this season. And Carroll, you know, you're looking at how you might want to pair him. I know a lot of people bring up the, you know, you need a Thunderback and a Lightning back. Justin Teller on our Cover 4 Live made a really good point yesterday. Georgia just needs more dynamic playmakers at that running back position. I think, you know, the difference between Georgia and Auburn last year, a big difference was Georgia had DeAndre Swift. He was able to do a lot of different things, whereas Auburn, you know, didn't really have that one guy who could do everything well. They sort of had bits and pieces guys. So, you know, Carroll, long-term, can he become a guy that can show off a diverse set of skill set? I think that's what Georgia is looking for now. And as far as a guy to pair him with, I think the two names that really come to mind is first Donovan Edwards out of Michigan, four-star running back, I believe the number four overall running back in the 247 composite rankings. And then another local guy, Cody Brown out of Parkview, who dominated 7A football this past year in Georgia, I believe. Touchdown of Atlanta named him the best junior in the state of Georgia last year. So Georgia gets a really good player in Lavoisier Carroll, but they're, as Richard LeCount and as David Daniel is now saying, they are not done yet at that position.
I want to remind you that you're watching Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. I think we're having a little bit of an issue on YouTube right now, but for those of you on Facebook, we appreciate you being here and being a part of what we're doing, and hope you'll check out Kroger as you head towards Easter weekend. Don't forget, Kroger's also got special hours for Easter Sunday there as well. Open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Easter Sunday for that last-minute shopping you might need to do, or just get ready for the upcoming week. Pharmacy hours as well from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. That comes up on Sunday, Easter Sunday there at Kroger, so they're still taking care of you on the holiday. And I'll give another shout-out to my friends at Kroger on this. I've just been blown away, amazed by the level of hygiene that Kroger has instituted with all of its stores. And the folks that are working so hard to do that, I told you the story the other day. Like, I got my items in my hand. I go to sit them down. They stopped me before I do and said, would you mind waiting? And they're wiping down the conveyor belt in between every customer. The shelves themselves are super clean. You can just smell the cleanliness on all the items. So it's obviously kind of a harrowing time, and we're nervous about our health and everything else. And Kroger's doing its part, whether it be extended hours or a little bit of an alteration to hours. They're doing their part to make sure all of this is as comfortable of a shopping experience as possible. And at my Kroger, the shelves have been really stocked. The whole thing's been really good and a really nice thing to be a part of. Connor, good stuff from you on that. Let me transition to Micah Morris here for a moment. I don't know if you and I have had a chance to talk about Morris yet. I did talk to Jeff about this yesterday. You know, I think there's a lot to like about Morris. I think it's fun to see Matt Luke with a full recruiting cycle under his belt. There's something, Connor, that Kirby Smart said, and I think it was on National Signing Day in 2016. I forget when it was. I think you have to go back to 2016 for this, but I always thought it was really interesting. He talked about how that for the bigger guys, line of scrimmage guys, offensive, defensive linemen, that the recruiting cycle for guys like that are just typically a little bit longer. That if you're not in on these guys early, then the good chance are you're not going to be in on them late either. Now, Matt Luke kind of proved that, I guess, the counterexample to that this past 2020 cycle when he stepped in on short notice and won some big recruits. But knowing that Luke is a good relationship builder, good recruiter, getting a chance to watch him for a full cycle here, how he's done with Micah Morris, how he might do with Dylan Fairchild, how he might do with Amarius Mims, obviously Terrence Ferguson, that to me is going to be really fun to watch. And if Luke isn't already one of the two or three most popular Georgia assistants, by the time we kick games off come September, I think that he's definitely going to be that guy. He's got a warm personality. I think it works with recruits. I think that Morris is an example of that.
Yeah, I think Georgia was always in a really good spot with Morris. Obviously, dating back, he had a December commit date when Sam Pittman was still the coach here. And I think maybe this is where Kirby Smart should get a little bit more credit when it comes to offensive line recruiting, because we've now seen through two different coaching staffs, or two different, you know, sort of offensive line coaches, he's still able to sell and convince players on sort of his, especially that offensive line, on his vision of what we're going to see and what, you know, potentially look at the next level. I think back to a guy like Isaiah Wilson in that 2017 class. Georgia's offensive line was not very good in 2016, and he was still able to convince a player of Isaiah Wilson's caliber to come down from New York. He had national offers from everywhere and sort of sign with this program. And I think Smart deserves a lot of credit for that recruitment. And I think the same can be said for Morris, just given, you know, there was obvious turnover between Pittman and Morris. And Morris did go out and he looked at Florida. He looked at Florida State. He looked at a couple other schools more closely. But ultimately, he decided that Georgia under Kirby Smart and Matt Luke was the best place for his future.
Let me hit a couple other topics while we've got some time to do so. You wrote at DogNation.com the other day a really interesting piece. I want to do a couple more offensive line things here for a moment. You talked about Clay Webb. And I think that Webb is a very interesting name on the Georgia roster because as a former five-star, there is this sense when he first arrives on campus that there's a curiosity of what can he do? How soon can he kind of fill in on the two deep? How can he be a contributor, a competitor for playing time, especially when there were some injuries and some things like that the Georgia offensive line dealt with a year ago? However, I don't think Webb not really emerging in that spot last year was necessarily any kind of evidence of him being behind schedule. This is a deeper offensive line than maybe it was back in 2017 when guys like Andrew Thomas emerged as a highly recruited incoming freshman. But as you kind of point out in your piece, 2020 is the time we should see a bit of an evolution for Webb. More ready to play now than he was when he first arrived on campus. And obviously Smart referenced Webb the other day when it came to guys who had a nice offseason and the conditioning work and kind of the pre-spring practice stuff that was going on there. I think Webb's a pretty fascinating player. And your comparison of him with Jamari Salyer and the path that Salyer's traveled, boy, it'd be nice to think that Webb could do a similar thing to that. But when you think about the overall profile of these two guys coming out of high school, they weren't wildly different prospects, were they?
No, I believe Webb was the number one center in the country in his class, and Salyer was the number one guard in his class. And the thing to keep in mind with these guys is people see these five-star rankings, and they just assume, you know, because guys like Nolan Smith, Trayvon Walker, and N'Kobe Dean all have success right away, that they're going to be able to come in and play. And on the offensive line in the SEC, I did a story earlier this year on sort of freshmen, or at least highly touted freshmen coming in and playing on the offensive line. And in the SEC and in the college football playoff era, Andrew Thomas is really the only one to have done it. You know, there are guys like Mitch Hyatt and Suell who have been able to replicate that. But at the SEC level, it's pretty much just him. And then I guess Jonah Williams as well from Alabama. So you have to be a truly rare and elite specimen to sort of be able to do that. And Webb, you know, he is smaller than the typical Georgia offensive lineman they brought in. He's only about 6'3", he came in around 295 pounds. And given just Georgia was so stacked at depth last year in that interior of the offensive line, and they are again this year, you know, Webb's really going to have to work and earn his way onto the field. But as we saw with Salyer last year, he was able to do that, and it put Georgia in a much better place this year than they probably should be, just given the losses that they've had on the offensive line. So if Webb is able to make, you know, those same gains and the fact that he's doing well in the offseason now, I think really helps Georgia to where Georgia's probably going to need Webb to be sort of that five-star player a year from now, given the more losses they're going to have on that offensive line.
You know, yesterday we got together for a Cover 4 broadcast, the four of us, you, me, Jeff Sintel, Mike Griffith, and one of the topics that came up were, you know, was the possibility of like one of these unsung heroes, a guy that wasn't necessarily the super elite recruit who could play a major role on this team for this year. And keeping with the theme of the offensive line for a moment, I thought your answer, Justin Schaefer, was a really thoughtful one, and I believe that's probably true. You know, Schaefer's one of these guys that was sort of out of sight, out of mind for a while because of how deep the Georgia offensive line was. And then maybe last year was a chance that he could have finally stepped into a role and probably would have, but he suffers a neck injury. If we assume that he's kind of behind all of that, and I think it's reasonable to assume that he will be, I do think that Schaefer is a likely starter on this team. And my guess is he's probably going to be a good one just based on the fact that he was essentially viewed as the eighth man a year ago. It seems like every single year, no matter how well Kirby Smart recruits, no matter how deep the overall roster is, there are sort of like these three-star and in some cases maybe even below, three-star and below prospects who end up playing a major role for this team. To me, it does seem like if you're looking for a candidate from that on this year's roster, I think Schaefer's about as good as a name as you can come up with.
Yeah, Schaefer, to give you sort of a backstory on him, he was the high school teammate of Natori Johnson. They were both in that 2017 class. And Natori was the more highly touted player, but Justin has really stuck with this offensive line route, and he's progressed and gotten better every year to a point where he started the Tennessee game last year, I believe, and he played very well in that game, and then unfortunately he suffers the neck injury. But you know, he's a guy Kirby Smart mentioned specifically by name as a guy who's emerged, I think, as a leader for this offensive line group. He's a guy who's clearly been around the block, and I think whoever ends up being that left tackle for Georgia, I think Schaefer is going to be a very valuable asset to whoever that guy is, because he's played real game reps next to Andrew Thomas. He's sort of played in a couple big SEC games. He knows sort of what he's looking at and what he's sort of has to do there. And I think him getting a more expanded role, sort of like we saw with Tate Crowder last year, I think he's going to be ready for that and might deliver a same similar performance to what Crowder was able to give.
Jennifer Caldwell Sperling says, "Oh, I'm wearing earrings right now because of the headphones I have in." Jennifer, thanks for noticing. I am growing a beard. My hair is getting very much longer, but I'm going to stop short of that fashion statement right now by going earrings. I don't think I'm much of an earring guy right now. That's probably not quite what I'm bringing to the table. A couple more minutes here with Connor Riley on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. I guess the point that I would make about Schaefer, and I've said this about Torrey Johnson in the past, I've said this about Nate McBride, I've said this about a few guys in the Georgia roster, that the fact that they haven't played a lot yet should not be viewed as some sort of indictment on them as players. You know, the notion of, and this is not a polite thing to say, but it's a conversation that happens, so-and-so is a bust because we haven't seen. There are busts. There are people that don't live up to the billing they had coming out of high school and don't necessarily shine once they get a chance to be on an SEC roster. But at Georgia right now, the fact that you're not playing is not necessarily evidence that you're some sort of bust and that you could not thrive if given a chance to play. Competition to be on the field's never been more intense than it is in Georgia right now. So for a Schaefer who may get his chance this year, for a guy like Notori who at one side of the ball, the other may get a chance, and eventually maybe even guys like McBride and others, you know, I think the fact that we haven't seen them yet is more of a testament to the depth of the Georgia roster than it is some sort of deficiency of these guys as players. The whole point of building depth is you've got good players waiting in the wings, and I think that Schaefer may be an example of one of those guys.
Right, and you can't always have it both ways where, all right, so Nate Bryant, I believe, was a top 150 recruit in that 2017 class, but Quay Walker was a top 50 recruit. N'Kobe Dean was a top 30 recruit. You know, you can't have it where Georgia is constantly recruiting the best of the best in the country and you want them to bring them in, but then you want these other guys who were maybe a little bit lower recruit or lower ranked as recruits to come in and play as well. You can't have your cake necessarily and eat it too. So sometimes, yeah, you're going to have guys like Justin Schaefer and Nate McBride who take a little bit longer to develop and see the field. But I think that's sort of the balance you need of guys who you can have and count on and rely on as veterans, and then also bring in young guys every year to sort of keep the program fresh and keep adding and stocking talent to it. And, you know, the really good teams, you know, Alabama and Clemson, when they've won titles, it's because they've gotten a lot out of both those young guys, those freshmen, those new players on the team every year. And they've also had seniors on the back end who've been able to help and sort of guide and provide that sort of veteran leadership to the team as well.
So Margaret Brooks, watching us on Facebook, said that I can't be allowed to leave my house because since we've been doing this video, I've already touched my face about six times. Connor, I give myself about a B+ on social distancing. I really have done a good job of keeping my distance. Even when I see someone in the neighborhood or something like that, I'm still about 10 feet away from everybody I've seen. But I'm no better than like a B- on the touching the face thing. I don't know why. I can't stop touching my face. I'm not taking it seriously to use double negative. I know that it's important. I just can't stop touching this face. I don't know what it is. If I'm doing it this much during the show when I know people are watching me, imagine how much face touching I'm doing. I rub my eyes. I'm rubbing my cheeks. I'm just rubbing everything. I mean, imagine how much of that I must be doing when I'm not on the air.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm worried. You know, that's your moneymaker. And if you're touching it and scruffing it and roughing it up all the time, you know, you got to be worried about that. As far as, you know, social distancing, I think I'm going to have to give myself an A. I had to have a difficult conversation with my parents yesterday that I didn't think it was a good idea to be coming up for Easter dinner. So me and my roommates are going to be doing Easter dinner and Easter brunch from our apartment, not from, you know, our parents' home, which obviously isn't ideal and it's not something we want to do. But I think in these times, you know, hey, it's a one-off. Hopefully we get through this quicker and, you know, maybe we do a big brunch and dinner at some point in May, hopefully.
Let me finish with this. You had a nice piece the other day about kind of what you've learned by some of the Scott Sinclair work that you've been doing. Hey, I think Sinclair stuff on this has been really good. I also think some of the nutrition videos they're starting to put out of some of the healthier recipes. They had a really fun one this week about, you know, making hamburgers using an egg to kind of, you know, give you a little bit extra protein on that and a little bit extra flavor, really, if you're going for that 90-10 fat to lean ratio. So those videos have been fun. The Sinclair videos, I think, are really generous because these are exercises that even someone like me can do. Now, listen, I'm not doing them, but it doesn't mean I couldn't do them. How much fun have you had doing them? How much fun have you had watching Sinclair's video of this? And, you know, this to me is an example of a small thing, but still meaningful nonetheless, of just trying to make the most of the situation that we're in.
Yeah, they've helped me a lot just in the sense of, one, I feel like I'm in pretty good shape right now, certainly better shape than when this quarantine started. And two, it sort of gives me a routine to follow and a sort of thing to do every day, or a thing to look forward to doing every day. But we ran into an issue on Wednesday. I was doing some of the workouts from my apartment complex parking lot, and one of them involved you doing like sideways push-ups on your hands. And I don't know how well you can see this, but I have pretty bad blisters on both my hands because of it. So when Coach Sinclair tells you you want to use a field or some grassy area if you can, I would listen to him so that you don't end up like me with pretty significant blisters on both your hands. But it's still, you know, I think the biggest thing is just it's a sense of it gives me, and I think the people who do it, a sense of routine, and that in these times where nothing really feels normal, I think that helps just as much as the actual physical activity.
Well, speaking of routines, there's no better routine for me than checking on the great stuff. It's DogNation.com every single day. Connor, I know you've got some really fun stuff coming up this weekend, including a look at UGA's uniforms. Can't wait to experience all of that. We'll look forward to, whether it be podcast, video, or some form or fashion, catching up with you on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger again next week as well.
Yep. Thanks, BA.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Fun to be able to talk to Connor Rowley here on Dog Nation Daily, and fun to really being doing it, that again on video today. Kind of almost felt like old times there for a moment. A really nice thing to be able to do. I want to give you an update on what SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey said about football's possible return in just a moment. Before that, though, quick message from my friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia. By now, you know they can help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors, and to best serve you during these unique times, they're doing a lot more stuff through video. You can still connect with them and get a nice free consultation, start a chat about how things need to go down for you as you get your windows and doors replaced. PellaBranch.com is the website to go for that. That's PellaBranch.com. And you'll be able to get some expert advice. They're going to show you product samples. They'll talk you through the installation options, give you a free quote. It's all very simple. It's safe to do. It's through the magic of video. PellaBranch.com to find out more about that. Also, don't forget about this great offer that's still going on through April 23rd. You can replace all your windows for as low as just $78 a month, or you can get 40% off qualifying installations. Just simply use the website, as I said before, PellaBranch.com, or give them a call, 404-445-2979. That's 404-445-2979. Pella Window and Door of Georgia is viewed to be the best. Story up at DogNation.com right now, looking at some things that Greg Sankey said in his appearance on the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday about the possible return of football and how the decision will be made in the SEC. What Sankey said was that we're not going to determine the timeline. The virus is going to determine the timeline. Of course, you've heard Anthony Fauci saying that. Sankey goes on to say that we're going to rely exactly on our public health officials at the national levels, the state levels, and around our campuses and communities to guide us towards a return to what we have known as normal. He goes on to say that every week we talk, there's something new that emerges that helps us our decision making. So the inability to answer right now, I think, is reality. We want to be intentional and careful, and yet we know those answers will emerge. I saw in some circles, including professional troll Dan Wolken from USA Today, a little bit of criticism of Sankey for not being more specific. I think that Wolken called it a word salad. In other words, kind of an incomprehensible collection of words kind of strewn together. And I'm sure that Wolken's, you know, words reflect the feelings of some other people as well, that may be growing frustrated that leaders like Greg Sankey can't talk more specifically about the timeline for making decisions. A lot of folks in the media seem to be very interested in that right now, even though the season itself is still 5 months away, or the specificity of exactly what the clear thinking is of guys like SEC Commissioner or other figures around college football right now. But here's the facts, though. I think, unfortunately, for someone like Sankey, it has proven wise not to reveal too much about what you're thinking in any given moment. I'm amazed at how toxic the conversation around the return of sports has become. It's almost like showing your commitment to like an indefinite form of lockdown has become this perverse form of virtue signaling. And as serious as the coronavirus is, and as steadfast as we must all be in battling against that, the way in which a talk about an eventual return of sports turns nasty so quick, I don't think anybody benefits from that. If you don't believe what I'm saying, let me give you an example of this. ESPN's Adam Schefter, who covers the NFL typically, tweeted yesterday, and as he explained on ESPN TV last night, that his information on this comes from like a lot of the pre-draft analysis he was doing, talking to figures around college football for players who will be in the upcoming NFL draft. But in doing that, the subject of college football's eventual return comes up. What Schefter tweeted could not be more benign. He says, speaking to people in and around college football this week, there is, quote, strong conviction there will be a college football season. Uncertainty about when, but it's going to happen. Now, Chris Murphy, a U.S. senator from Connecticut, sees that tweet and then tweets this. And I apologize, this is a little bit more volatile than we would typically read here. Murphy, the senator, though, says, when a business model is this lucrative, loads of rich white men making millions off unpaid labor of mostly African-American young men, it's hard to resist, even if the life and death of the free labor is at stake. That's Chris Murphy on Twitter, a U.S. senator from Connecticut. Now, please hear me out on this. The subject of the coronavirus and the subject of the right to make money off your likeness and image, which college football have debated, those are all very complicated topics, and it takes more than just the time we have for a short podcast like this to deal with any of that. So I'm not really all that interested in the substance of what Murphy, the U.S. senator from Connecticut, says there. I'm more interested in the tone with which he says it. I think that Schefter's tweet could not have been more, as I said before, just kind of benign. You know, nothing too controversial about that. And yet a U.S. senator takes that as an opportunity to lash out about the topic. I think it ought to be a little safer to speak about these things. People ought to be able to share their opinion about when sports should return. Some are going to think sooner. Some are going to think it needs to be later, but whatever else. Can we turn down the volume on some of this? Can we turn down the nastiness on some of this? I mean, I have no idea when the lockdown ends, and I've said before, I'm obviously someone who wants to see sports sooner rather than later. But no matter where you kind of fall on the spectrum of how quickly this can happen, that kind of vitriol on social media just seems to be completely out of place. And for Greg Sankey, who chose his words carefully in the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday, that's probably a good reason why. 1,259 days, that's how long it's been since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. That's good news here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. Have a great weekend and happy Easter, everybody.